You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
Okay. Hello, and welcome to Fanboy Versus. Once again, I am not JD Church, but I do have with me Chris Triplett and Nicole.
Hello.
JD's plane was shot down over the Sea of Japan, Brian reports to us this week. So he'll probably be back next week.
He's probably going to be replaced by Harry Morgan next week.
Look, I never watched MASH, okay? I can't make MASH jokes. I'm just repeating them. He's a little young for MASH.
All that we can say is that Radar was really broken up over the news of what happened to JD. That's all I can say.
The thing is, I know what you're talking about,
I love MASH. Brian loves MASH, and I love MASH.
I do enjoy MASH.
I got nothing. Alan Alda was in it.
Yeah.
That's it, yeah.
Just you right, so just for the show. Triplett?
What? Huh?
Just need a cross-dresser for the show.
No.
No.
Cleaner. Okay, I had to think for a minute. What? Huh? Yeah.
That makes
so, despite the fact that C2E2 is on this weekend, there really doesn't seem to be any news coming out of it at all. Like, there are reports about what... Like, there's not that there's not news, but they're all just, yes, this month Booster Gold will be in something, or whatever. You know, they're just general plans for characters for the future. Nothing, no announcements of new series or anything, nothing of any great note being announced at all, except, I'm sure, on Triplett's behalf, the fact that Spider-Man 2099 will be appearing in Superior Spider-Man in
damn
a few
straight
months' time. Oh, yeah.
Felt bad for doing that thing where, like, he teased it and made us think that Spidey 2099, like Miguel, was going to be the Superior Spider-Man. So he's like, he's got to make up for it.
Superior Spider-Man needs more Spider-Man in the storyline.
You know, I'm glad that Superior Spider-Man is as good as it did, because I was really bummed when I found out that he wasn't going to be Miguel O'Hara. Because, man, I was like, damn, he would be a Superior Spider-Man. He's got claws, and, you know, he's got the... You know, Day of the Dead costume, and he was from the 90s, and Peter David created it.
Yeah. And man, we got issue 9 coming out next week now as well for Superior Spidey. That's the Parkerectomy issue, so we'll see what's happening there. No, it's all really, it's all movie news this week, because we have had the Thor the Dark World trailer.
That was a surprise. When you went and saw it, did it run with
it? Not over here. No, it did not. It did not run over here.
Huh.
I mean, it might be in America, but it did not run over here.
We haven't got it yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because that's the other bit of news is that Iron Man 3 came out in the UK this week.
Woo-hoo!
So, no spoilers. But so here's a micro review for you, which is that. It is good. Objectively, it is good. It is better than Iron Man 2, definitely.
Thank God, thank you. That's all you had to say.
It is better than Iron Man 2. I'm not sure if it's better than Iron Man 1. But, and it's quite a large but, sadly. It does this one thing. And I guarantee you now, everybody who has seen the film already knows what one thing I'm talking about. And everybody who has not seen the film yet, when you go to see the film, you will know what the one thing is as soon as you see it.
Is it mass marketing, you know, product placement like Burger King?
The one thing something they can edit out of the American release so that we can get a better movie?
It is not. No, it is intrinsic to the film.
Damn.
This is the other thing, is that it is only something that will affect comic book fans.
Jesus.
It is not something that normal people or that film critics will down upon. You guys know me. I am not normally the kind of guy who is averse to or judgy of or have automatic dislike for films that make changes to the source material because for the needs to adapt things to other media, to film, to cartoons, to whatever. I'm pretty fucking pissed off. Not all comic book fans will react to it the same way. I've talked to plenty who didn't. I've talked to plenty who did. I honestly can't even intimate to you what it is without blowing the spoiler.
Yeah, I don't want to know.
I want to know now. That
no,
you can tell me after.
Don't worry. I'm not saying anything.
I love McFeely rants.
No, we'll save this for next week. We will.
I don't want to know that Rhodey is really Tony Stark's father. I don't want to know that. You know?
No, I've gone back and forth on it an awful lot, and I'm almost at peace with it, but hate is, it's too strong to say I hate it, even coming out of the cinema. Hate's too strong. Disappointment is too soft. Let's just say I was very upset that they decided to go this way, they did. And I've observed now in reviews, negative reviews, because there have been some negative reviews, from comics fans and things. Every single negative review leads with the complaint over this thing that happens in this thing. It really I've thought about this a lot, and I have come to the conclusion, it really does punch a very nasty hole through the infrastructure of the film. And the rest of the film is just sort of sucked into this black hole of this one thing. And I've seen people doing it. It is causing people to pick rest of the film apart and harp on issues that are, because every film's got issues, that I just really don't think they would be making as big a deal out of if this one thing was not there, pitting them against the film, essentially.
So what you're saying is that it was actually the Sandman that killed Ben Parker, is what you're saying. Is that what you're saying? Because that's hearing when you say that.
If it was only that, I'm not even being funny when I'm saying if it was only something on that level, that would be.
Man, I watched Spider-Man 3 on FX then, and I was like thinking, damn, I hate this so much.
I don't read the Iron Man comics, but I know pretty much.
See, Nicole, will be bothered by this.
Okay.
Don't think you will be bothered by this. Triplet?
Yeah.
You might be able to shake it off.
My knowledge, Iron Man is not like everything. It's like 90%.
No, it's not. It's not a knowledge based thing.
Yeah,
it's hard to explain without just.
Okay, I read a lot of adventure stuff. So that's how I get my Iron Man information. I don't read just Iron Man. I read a lot of Avengers. Is that kind of like the same thing? If I'm just an Avengers fan, will I be ticked off, or is it just purely Iron Man?
It's hard. It's really hard to say exactly what it is. It's if I say too much, you'll start to suspect what it might be. The film is good. Okay, it is honestly good. It is getting really good reviews from critics across the board. I don't know if you looked. It's got 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. Rotten Tomatoes. There have been in. There have been enough. There have been enough reviews that the site has even formed one of their, conclusions about it. That's up there in the banner headline. It's getting the reviews that it deserves to get in isolation as a two-hour piece of work as a film, unbeholden to its source material or anything else. And I'm normally really good about separating things from the source material and just enjoying them for what they are. But this one thing is really going to—it is an honest make or break for comic book fans. Some fans will be able to overcome it or overlook it or just won't be bothered by it at all. A lot of fans will be and have been and are really tearing into the film above and beyond what it deserves because this thing has just punched a hole clean through it, and the rest of it is just cracking around it. So it's like if you imagine it as a pane of glass, imagine something getting punched out of it, and all the cracks from the hole spreading out to the rest of the film, where you wouldn't really normally take issue with the things you're seeing, but you are against the film because of this thing that it's done. And that's
what you're saying is tune in next week to hear McFeely's what it was bothering me, because we're going to probably be talking about this at the top of the show next week.
Yeah,
what I'm really saying is don't be disappointed when Fiend Fang Foom is awesome.
And it's camp.
That's all I can say. We'll leave it at that. Okay. That's not spoiler. But there is honestly tons of good stuff in it as well. There's lots of good stuff. I mean, it does all the things that Iron Man 2 really should have done. It is the obligatory superhero sequel setup shtick of man must prove himself hero without powers. We've seen in Superman 2 and Spider-Man 2 and things like that, which Iron Man 2 really should have done, because the thing about Iron Man 2, as we all said back when Iron Man 2 came out, was that it doesn't up the stakes at all. It's just Iron Man 1 again. There's nothing different, and that's what Iron Man 3 does. The stakes are increased drastically. The villain is not a guy in a robot suit for a change, it is self. But and it also, in defense of not doing it for Iron Man 2, it is an idea that works better in a post-Avengers world where Iron Man suddenly finds that his world is filled with gods and aliens and monsters. And he suddenly feels very small and very human in the face of all of this, and he's worried about the fact that he is only a man in a can, and that's emotional crisis that drives him, and his vulnerability is exploited, and he is like, there is a long stretch in the middle of the film where he is deprived of his armor, and well, I mean, you've seen the trailers, you know that the film rolls on, it basically responds to that by going, okay, we made you wait for the Iron Man. Now here is all of the Iron Man.
Yeah,
that's the one part I was going to have a problem with in the trailer. I'm like, oh no. So we'll see. Right. We'll see.
I don't want to really know anything about like the ending or anything. But another piece of news is they did an interview with Gwyneth Paltrow, and she said there's no Iron Man 4. So the what film? Do we think about that?
Well,
I think that's a good thing. When industry goes way too far, it's.
I mean, what are we thinking? Like Iron Man reboot after Avengers 2?
I don't know.
You don't think so?
They just can't afford to pay Robert Downey Jr. anymore.
Well, I'll tell you. This is not a spoiler. The same thing happens at the end of the credits as happened at the end. Oh, there is a scene at the end of the credits, so I obviously stay for the end of the credits.
Oh, shocker! Really?
Yeah, shocker! Yeah. But they do the same thing at the end of the credits with Iron Man as they did with the end of with Thor and Captain America, where it says Tony Stark will return. You know, so. But at the very end,
in Avengers 2.
But it doesn't say what, it just says we'll return in. But that's it, it's obviously going to be Avengers 2. And the film does, rather suddenly at the end, shoot for a note of finality to a trilogy that really wasn't present in the rest of the film. I could believe there wasn't going to be a 4 off the back of it, but Avengers 2 is happening, so I'm not sure why you put that in there. You know, I mean, it's like, we've had Avengers now. Iron Man is bigger than just a trilogy of Iron Man films. It's not. It is part of a universe. And it's not just a trilogy that you can just put out.
Well, I assume they can't afford him anymore. I assume like he's probably locked in for Avengers 2, but I would think Avengers 2 will be it for Robert Downey. And I'm thinking that because they've even been talking about this for a while that he's only contracted through Iron Man 3, so they would have to give him, I guess, like a new contract if they want to do an Iron Man 4. And depending on what this movie makes, which Brian was saying the other day, that they're thinking
money.
Yeah, they're thinking that it's making Avengers money, which sounds crazy, but yeah, that could happen. It's
a full film post-Avengers. It is going to make insane money. Thor 2 is going to be the real financial test.
Yeah.
So we see if people are really willing to come
if
back.
If Loki's
for
in
more
it, I'll probably see it 3 or 4 times. For sure.
Oh, well, Loki's in it, yeah.
Yeah, I know. He's actually contracted for 5 more movies, so.
For him,
Tom Hiddleston. So. And two of them, one of them's Thor 2, one of them's Avengers Guardians 2, so he's still contracted for 3 more movies.
I say he's going to be an Avenger. He's going to be a good guy at one point. That's what I'm saying. he's going to turn into a small child, and he's going to help save the day.
Okay, I would love to see the Loki on the screen.
You know, that's the thing. We see in the Thor 2 trailer that Thor has to go to Loki for help, and a big part of the climax of the first act of Walt Simonson's Thor in the war against Surtur is that Thor has to team up with Loki to beat Surtur. So we shall see.
Maybe Loki will get his own movie, and I will be the happiest woman on this planet.
And it'll be called Journey into Mystery, starring Loki.
That'd be awesome!
That was one of the big news this week, was, you know, the Thor trailer. So, like, what did we think about the Thor trailer? I thought it looked pretty good. I mean, did you guys like it?
It's quite subdued. Like, there's a bunch of things exploding and everything, but it doesn't show or tell an awful lot. It is marketed as a teaser trailer. So
it's very much a teaser.
It gives the illusion of the fact that it's showing you a lot of stuff, but not really.
Yeah. Hey, something's going on. Hey, look, there's Odin. Hey, Loki. Hey,
it just looks like they are upping the stakes pretty significantly. I mean, I loved the first Thor movie probably more than it deserves, to be honest.
But
I think all the right things for me.
Marvel movies, you know, the single ones before Avengers, I still think Thor is probably my favorite.
Well, Thor had to be strong because it's like it's the flimsier concept. It's the concept that's harder to get across to people. It's like, he's a guy with a hammer. You know?
They played it very safely. I mean, they got as grand as they possibly could, but ultimately it was a fight in a small New Mexico town.
Yeah,
that was about, you know. And I don't mark the film down for that, but it does seem like where Iron Man 2, as the first of the Marvel sequels, really failed to raise the stakes. Thor 2 does look like it is going to be successfully upping the stakes for...
I want way more Asgard. I think more Asgard would be a good thing for the sequel.
I was surprised how much Asgard there was in the first one, to be honest.
Well, I mean, yeah, there was plenty of it in the first one, but I meant, like, you know, other areas.
Thor 2 just better have more Volstagg. That's all I want. More Volstagg.
Oh, yeah, man. More Volstagg.
Maybe a CGI creative Volstagg this time, because he's not fat enough and he needs to be fat.
He wasn't fat.
He wasn't fat.
I still liked him.
Yeah, he was all right. Hector was fine.
They have a new guy playing Fandral in this one, which disappoints me.
Yeah.
Because it's not like the Warriors 3 or Sif had huge roles in the first one anyway. Sif is supposed to have quite a bigger role in this one. There's going to be a bit more of a love rivalry with Jane Foster in this one, apparently. But
the Princess Bride guy, right? I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense if you're upgrading, right?
I know, it's like, what else could you possibly get? Because the guy who played in the first one, it was like Fondrel had just stepped off of the friggin' comic page.
Yeah.
So I don't. Against that new guy.
Yeah,
I like the guy who played Volstagg. He did a great job playing Firefly too.
Yeah, he was Firefly, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yes, he was.
He was the Punisher. I didn't care for that movie. I was just,
not so much that.
So much that one.
He's doing the rounds on old Marvel properties, isn't he? No, I did enjoy him as Volstagg, but he wasn't fat enough. But then I don't think anything could humanly be, you know. God, I love Volstagg. As I say, I'm reading Walt Simonson Thor at the minute, and Volstagg is just so great in it. He is the only supporting character Thor needs.
He was great in Journey into Mystery this month. I thought that was, like, awesome. His family, you know, his daughter.
Yeah, I mean, I picked up the issue, and I was like, you know, Tales of Fenris, another thrilling adventure. So I was like, oh my god, is this some kind of collection of short stories that Volstagg is going to tell his children? And sadly, it wasn't, but it was still a pretty good issue.
I think that was my favorite issue from 2 years ago.
Whenever he sums up the whole Fear Itself storyline for his kids as a story.
Yeah. I was like, this is perfect.
And then his wife comes up to him at the end, and he's like, you know, and she said, oh, you shouldn't tell them such things, you know, and she says, they are just stories. Let them be children for a little longer. Journey into Mystery is well good.
When's that omnibus coming out? I want to know.
Man, indeed. I haven't solicited that yet. But
want that.
It deserves an omnibus.
Jesus, I will buy that. I swear I will.
Yeah, I would honestly contemplate buying that just for a complete big collection like that.
I missed issues. Like my comic shop screwed me on Journey into Mystery. I had to get them through Comixology, so I got gaps. So I need the omnibus. I need it now.
You need the physical.
I need it. I need it to be like a tomb. So I can, like, put it somewhere. I can hit people with it and say, hey, read this.
Boom.
I see they're collecting, just speaking of omnibuses, it's a random thing, but I saw it in the solicit, the new solicits that have come out. They're doing Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four omnibus.
Mm.
Just one to start. Just what
about that would cost?
Well, it's a two-volume thing, so it's not all of it at once, but... The first one goes all the way through the first act of Fantastic Four, and I think it's got the first trade's worth of FF in it as well. Then the second omnibus will contain the end of everything. It'll be a two omnibus thing. I'm waiting now on the announcement of a second volume of John Byrne's Fantastic Four omnibus, because I really enjoyed the first one after, you know, never reading Byrne's Fantastic Four stuff before, and then finally getting around to it through the omnibus. I need more of it now. Well, I think that's about all the news, really, isn't it? Anything else?
What's Twitter saying?
I know that we're getting a Comic Con here in Salt Lake City. Woohoo!
Woohoo!
There you go. And it's literally down the street from me. So, there you go.
That's good.
I'm scanning my Twitter to see if there's anything
going on. You would think there would be more news would have come out, but I just haven't...
It's going to be a Miles Morales reference in the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon.
Hooray!
I haven't watched Ultimate Spider-Man for a long time.
Yeah, I didn't realize it came back. I was like looking at something this morning. I was like, I wonder when that's coming back. Oh, wait, Jesus, it came back in January. Okay, I guess I'm not missing anything.
Oh, I guess the new Teen Titans Go premiered this week. And
yeah, I watched it.
Oh, yeah, that happened. I haven't watched that.
I watched an episode. I don't know if I saw the first one. I saw a episode.
Well, there's only been the one, so.
There's been two.
Oh, there's only been one. Has there been two? I don't know. Yeah. I saw the one where they are getting the perfect sandwich. Which one's that one?
Did you see Sounds that good.
That was the first one, I believe, so.
Okay, that's the one I saw. Man, I'm conflicted on that. What'd you think about it?
I'm not a fan.
On one hand, I was like, dude, you're like replacing Young Justice with this. I loved Young Justice. But on the other hand, you're getting the cast back, but it's not the way I want them back.
I think they were just to keep the new Teen Titans just as the short clips. It was cute for the short clips, but it just because something's good. Yeah. Doesn't mean you can extend it and get the same quality.
I kind of feel like they would do better if they would turn it into like regular show and make it like 15-minute episodes instead of like a 30-minute thing.
That would be, I mean, it basically is
because it's like two shows, two episodes in one episode, like each 15 minutes. So why didn't they just do that? Just break it up and be like little 15-minute episodes they can play throughout the day. But I don't know.
I've seen some very positive reactions to it, but
I don't think it's bad.
I'm sure with a lot of people, though, that it is fighting an uphill battle in that it is DC's new thing after Young Justice and Green Lantern get axed.
Just bring Green Lantern back.
Not that it's bad. There was even a My Little Pony joke in it, which I thought was funny. You know, Raven is a closet My Little Pony fan. Did you see that?
That one I saw because it's the most posted everywhere on the internet.
I think that was a little odd myself, because it should have been more...
Did you get it? It's because...
Of course I got it!
Did you get it? Jesus.
If I didn't get that, I deserve to be punished. Okay.
But yeah, I think the show's fine, it's just... It's not what I want. You know, it's just...
I think we should just keep it to the shorts and bring back Green Lantern.
I'm an old man. I like my old man stuff. I don't like this new stuff these kids like.
See, I'm a person, I love change. I love to see new things, and this is just one of those ones that's just like, not really.
I think they're trying to make it as cutesy and like, you know, kind of childish as they can, so that when we finally do get Beware the Batman, we'll appreciate it because it will be more adult.
I was about to say, yeah, wait for Beware the Batman, because that's supposed to be giving you what you want, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's what they're doing. They're like, it's like, man, this is just like the wrong direction. And I kind of am looking forward to the Batman now because of this. Psychology, that's what it is.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you know what I'm watching at the minute, actually, is, or rewatching, I should say, is I'm rewatching the 2006 Fantastic Four cartoon, which was, you may remember, the slightly anime-inspired one.
And oh, that one, really, okay. Yeah.
That was a really underrated show, but it was doomed from the start because it was the first superhero, I'm pretty sure, it was the first superhero cartoon from the big two after Justice League. And it turned out to be a legitimately funny, but, you know, a kind of, like, comedy-focused superhero cartoon. It wasn't comedy-focused, but it could be very comedic and very funny. But that is not what anybody was expecting or wanting off the back of Justice League.
Yeah, it was one of those deals where I watched two episodes and never watched another episode. I was like, yeah, just like you just said, it isn't what I want, so I just kind of like, eh. Sorry.
I'd honestly recommend anybody go back to it. I mean, and certainly, as it originally aired, I would not have blamed anybody for just giving up on it, because that aired, I mean, there's no actual overarching story or anything, that being one of the problems, given that Justice League had just proved a masterclass in that. But there is a general sort of flow to it that was just totally thrown out by the messed up airing order and the fact that it only aired like 7 episodes before being pulled. It came out whenever the film came out, and then
was that film continuity? Because I want to say that it was, but I'm not sure.
No, it wasn't. I mean, it drew from it in that they were on a space station and not a ship. But beyond that, no, there wasn't continuity with the film or anything. And they couldn't use Galactus because of the second film, but it still wasn't in continuity with it. At least not apparently, anyway. I mean, Alicia Masters was black in it. But
I was thinking for some reason that it was. I was thinking that it was movie continuity. I think that's what maybe turned me off from it. I was like, sorry. Bye.
You know? No, I own the DVDs. I mean, I enjoyed it enough that I wanted to buy the DVD set. And actually being able to watch it in the proper order it's supposed to go in. This is the viewing experience, most definitely. I don't know why we're talking about this and I just randomly brought it up. But yeah, no, I mean, I would recommend everybody going back to it. It was just... it's still probably the best Fantastic Four cartoon, I think.
So you're saying it's better than the Iron Man Fantastic Four cartoon from the 90s? Is that what you're saying?
Well,
that...
certainly better than the first season.
Only thing I remember from that show is that I think like Ghost Rider beat Galactus.
He did. That happened. That was a
that did happen. Yes. And then he just drove off.
The idea of it. He used the penance stare on him, made him feel all the pain of billions of lives he destroyed.
Like hell.
But he did just literally drive up out of nowhere. He wasn't he wasn't set up by the rest of the episode or anything. He wasn't working with the FF. It was just like they're like, well, I don't know what we're gonna do. They think we're vroom! It's the Ghost Rider. It was voiced by Richard Grieco.
Really?
Yeah,
It
was weird. And I believe it was supposed to be like a backdoor pilot for a Ghost Rider show, because he turns up in the Hulk cartoon, isn't it? No, it was in Iron Man, it was in the Hulk. The next year, maybe? Or around the same time, he turned up in that. But that's whenever Marvel was getting crossover happy.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's probably should get onto some actual comics or something.
Some real comics, not cartoons.
Yeah. Triplet, kick us off there with a recommendation for this week. What do you got, son?
I'm just going to do like two quick little kind of recommends or talk about Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 22. That book with that other Spider-Man guy who's pretty awesome.
Really is off the radar at the minute, isn't it? Like,
yeah, I mean, like nobody's talking about it. I haven't heard anything about it in a long time.
Like the
I'm
Ultimate Universe.
I'm still reading it, but
yeah, so am I. Yeah, I mean, I'm still getting it, but it's like the Ultimate Universe. If you could imagine a dead spider on its back with the legs just slowly curling inwards, Like, that's the Ultimate Universe right now. Like, yeah. Nobody is talking about the Ultimate Universe. Oh, hey, you know, that reminds me, actually. That is news. I just remembered. There's a mystery solicit for the new solicits that have come out. Age of Ultron. So we know we've got Age of Ultron number 10 next month. And Age of Ultron number 10 AI, which is the epilogue issue, and obviously is going to set up the Avengers AI series. But in the month after, Age of Ultron UC.
Oh.
Now, we have no Age of Ultron 10 UC, I should say, as well. It's still number 10. But we don't know what it is, but they have released one teaser, which is the word hunger in purple. Now, there was some speculation UC could stand for Ultimate Comics, because that's what reminded me of it. Yeah. But Galactus is rather significantly called, and repeatedly called, a universal constant in New Avengers this month. So, who knows?
Hmm. Huh. Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so back to Ultimate Spider-Man. Just remember that.
Yeah, I mean, like, what I was going to say is, like, the Ultimate Universe, I don't care what's going on in the rest of the universe. So whenever they cross over with Ultimate Spider-Man, I really don't care if Captain America is president. I don't know. Maybe he is president. Is he? I don't know. I'm not sure.
I think he might be.
I think he is, but I'm not sure. I don't care. But, like, I like Ultimate Spider-Man comic, and as long as it keeps being good, you know, I'll keep getting it. As long as Miles Morales is in the book, because, you know, I was reading this issue, and I was thinking, okay, I still like this book, I'm still enjoying it, I still like this character. What about when they decide to bring back Peter Parker? Miles goes away. What am I going to do then? I was thinking, well, you know, that might be the thing that makes me not want to get the book anymore. Like, if they get rid of Miles, like, right now, this is, like, the reason for me to get the book. It's different. You know, it's not Peter Parker. It's this other guy.
Yeah, that's what I like. That's one reason why I like it.
And I like that it's a different type of Spider-Man. He's got different powers. He does different things, you know? He's an actual kid, you know? He's not, like, a dude. Yeah, he's, like, super young. Yeah, I love that about it. And he actually has to deal with this shit as he's growing up, you know? And this issue, it's you know, basically about, it's the end of the storyline with Venom, because, you know, Venom is back. He's attacked his dad in previous issues. His dad's, like, wound up at a hospital. He's having to take him out, and he's got some stuff going on with his identity has been compromised. And, I mean, I don't want to spoil how it ends or anything, but, you know, he has his fight. A major character does die. I'm not going to say who dies.
Oh.
But something happens that leads into the next storyline, which the next storyline, they're doing the whole Spider-Man No More with Ultimate Comics. You know, Miles, something has happened, and he's done. He is done. They're going in that direction with the story. But it's still such a good book, and I love the characters. I love the cast. I want to know what's going to happen with Miles. I'm very interested in the story.
This is kind of sad to think about that.
Yeah. And another sad thing is this is the last issue by Sarah Pichelli doing the art.
Yeah.
She's done with this one. They're getting a new artist next month, and I don't know.
Well, it is David Marquez, who's the guy who's been doing the fill-in issues already. So okay. The book is still going to look great.
So it's going to be gorgeous then. That's awesome.
We're going to have good, solid visual continuity. It's not going to suddenly look massively different. He's a good match for her style.
Yeah.
But so then he really draws the shit out of this issue as well.
Oh, yeah. It is a beautiful issue. Faces. Yeah, Faces are great in this issue. Which is, you know, a lot of, you know, what's going on in this comic, it has to deal with, you know, the emotions coming from the faces anyway. And
I'm interested in finding out what she's going on to, frankly. Because she's really only drawn this at Marvel, so I'm like...
Yeah, they made a comic, I read
something she deserves to be on, something nice and big and exciting, because I would pay attention to that.
Yeah, I read the end of it, and they said she moves on to a new assignment while we here in the Ultimate Comics are very sad to see her leave and jealous with where she goes.
Office. Yeah.
So, I don't know, maybe it's something
else. Don't tell me they're going to put her on, like, X-Men Legacy or something, because I don't want to read that. I'm not going to read that. You know, I would like to see her on something, you know, she deserves to be on something big.
You know what I wish they would put her on, but I know they would never do it, just because, like, I'm not a huge fan of the art of the book that's on it right now. Captain Marvel.
Oh, yes. Oh, that would look good.
I would love to see her art for, you know, Carol Danvers and Captain mm-hmm. Marvel. I don't see it happening because, like, I mean, that book is what, like, one foot in the grave already. I mean,
it's not long for this world. That book is getting an extension of life because it is a female centric book, and I don't mean to, you know, judge you or anything, but that is what's
I hope that she either winds up on a book that I get. If not, then maybe something I'll be interested in, because I would like to see her art again. Turned out really good.
Really?
And then just like a quick mention, I read Guardians of the Galaxy number 1 and 2, and I just thought I'd let you guys know a little bit about it.
Yes. Wait, no, JD's not here.
Oh. The book is it's okay, but it's like its problem is the problem with anything that Bendis does. It's very Bendis-y. It's like I think I would love a Guardians of the Galaxy book if it was like, I don't know, Star Trek-ish or Firefly-ish or even Star Wars-ish. You know what I mean? Like some sort of space adventure-ish thing that's going on in it. And it's not really gotten started yet. It's mostly been like a big fight for like the last two issues. The basic idea of the story right now is like we know that Star-Lord's dad is like this emperor or something, like a king or something of his own planet. And he's setting in motion these things that he's decided to call all these alien races together in a meeting. And he basically says, okay, Earth is off limits. All the crap that's going on with Earth, they got superheroes, they got all these superpowered beings, stuff's going down. They're a real threat now, but they're still too young to, you know, go out into space and everything, so it's off limits. I don't want any of you guys going there. We all have to agree that, you know, you guys aren't going there. And by doing that, he basically paints a target on Earth, and then shit hits the fan, and like the Badoon, I think is what it is, you know, invades Earth to attack him.
That is so that's like he's using the Badoon because the Badoon were the baddies in the original Guardians of the Galaxy back in the 70s.
Yeah,
that's the only reason he's doing it.
And so, like, that's kind of like, you know, the idea of the story so far, and like I'm interested, but I don't. Like, I'm kind of stuck, because, like, I know there's a movie coming out for this. I know Marvel's going to be focusing on this book a lot. It's Bendis' book right now. I know that, you know, they're going to be doing big, important things with it, and I want to keep getting it. But in the back of my head, I'm, like, thinking, do I really want to keep getting this book? You know? I think I'm going to give it a couple more issues. Like, maybe issue 3 or 4.
It's gone for a very oddly Earth-centric thing for being the space book, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's still... miles better. It's an all-new X-Men. They're both miles better than where Bendis was at by the time Avengers was over.
Yeah, I agree
but
with that.
By the time Avengers was over, we were all pretty fucking sick of Bendis.
Yeah.
And I don't just mean like...
But the thing is, it's like a different type of Bendis, because like, we talk about like Ultimate Spider-Man, he's doing Ultimate Spider-Man. I like that Bendis. That's the Bendis I like. It's just like...
You forget that he's doing that, because it's so under the radar at the minute, and Bendis does not fly under the radar.
So, yeah, I mean, I think I want to stick with it. It's not that it's bad, it's just that it's not... It's like, oh my god, Guardians of the Galaxy has come out this week. You know, it's not like that. It's somewhere in the middle, and I'm hoping it'll get better. Tony's, you know, on the team, I guess. He's, you know, involved with what's going on. I think it's worth, you know, trying out for the... I think maybe the first storyline will probably be done by, like, what, issue 5 or something, maybe by then.
Maybe the new 6, yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's not terrible. It's not great, but it's not terrible.
The first issue sold huge numbers. Though.
Oh, did it?
Yeah,
I couldn't get it.
The
first issue came out like a couple of weeks ago, and my comic shop did not have a copy. I couldn't get it. They had to either give me a reprint. I don't know if they did reprints on it or not. They eventually got me a copy.
Oh, sure, they must have done. Yeah. Actually, come to think of it, I think the only reprint. I think the first reprint might be just out now. Just now. I suppose that probably.
I got number one last week. I got number one last week. I got number two this. That's it. I'm good. I'm done.
Is the strip across the bottom of Guardians of Galaxy, is it blue or red?
Oh, which one? Number two?
Number one.
Number one. I don't have number one handy. I've got number two. Sorry.
I could have told you. Blue means second print.
Does it? But I did think of one thing, though. It did have, I want to say a page that had...
Shut up.
All the alternate covers on it. My God, they did a ton of alternate covers for.
Yeah, that's why it's so many as it did.
They did a ton of them.
Please ignore the transforming noise.
Yeah.
Nicole, what do you got? Nicole? Did we lose Nicole?
No, I was coughing. I was on mute.
Sorry.
I forgot to unmute myself. How's Samurai Prowl?
No, this is... I'm on to Ultra Magnus now. He's one of those ones that makes an automated transforming noise.
The legends? I mean, the leader?
Aminated, yeah.
Yeah. Aminated! I like that one.
Yeah, mine's still in its box. I know!
Oh, he doesn't speak now that his arms are up. Never mind.
I know. Most of my animated stuff is still in box. Anyway.
Travesty.
I know. Well, it happens. So, okay, I wanted to mention two comics. There we go. I haven't talked about these guys for a while, but I think it's time because it's a new storyline. I'm talking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Surprise!
I am so far behind in Turtles.
Okay.
I get caught up, but I can't.
I'm going to say something that I know you guys probably... I did not... I was kind of disappointed in the last storyline. Yeah, because they were on Planet X, and it kind of got, it was a really good story, it just wasn't what I wanted, so I was just being picky myself.
Went all sci-fi-ish.
Yeah, I liked
wasn't
sci-fi.
Enough, probably wasn't enough of the Triceratops alien guys. There should have been more of those.
It was good, and it left you on a cliffhanger, but I'm glad they're back on Earth. In this issue, they are back on Earth. And when you first open up the comic, you're like, wait, did I pick up my classics comic? Because Eastman is back doing the artwork on here. So it's
did he
classic.
Do the interiors? He did the interiors?
Yeah, he did
also.
The interiors.
I saw the cover. So, I thought the cover was like, well, awesome, he did a variant cover, but he did the interiors.
No,
that's awesome.
No, I was like, wait, did I pick up the classic? No, Eastman has done all the drawings. So if you're a fan of the classic comics, there you go. You've got it looking, and I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. And it's colored really well, and it just gave me like a little hug, you know? Like, here we go. We're back on Earth.
If they really wanted to confuse you, they should have just made it black and white also. Then you
yeah, that's true. Or with all red bandanas, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, all red bandanas were at the beginning of the reboot. Two and three, I think it was the first.
I have read
that. Nice nod. I liked that. I love that.
Yeah. So this one, is, like I said, it was like a nice little hug going back into the old days where Eastman was in charge of most of everything. So, but what happens is the four of them, they're meeting a challenge like they've never seen, and they are getting their butts whooped. And this opponent is giving them martial arts from every which direction of the earth, every corner of the earth, and they're not liking it because this guy is just pounding them. And after he's giving him pounding, he's going after Splinter. He knows where Splinter's at. Guess what? The boys don't like that. So, the fight continues, and let's just say there's a little surprise at the end. And I'm not going to give that away.
Good. I need to read it. But,
yeah, because just like, oh, dang. that was really good. But there's also a side story with Shredder. This and Karai. They're back in Japan, and they're going to be resurrecting someone. Again, ooh. Another one I am not going to spoil.
I don't know who's dead, so I don't know who they could be.
Did you get the Crane micro series comic? I didn't get that either.
That comes out next week, I think.
Was that next week?
First issue of that.
For some reason, I thought the first issue came out.
No,
already,
it's definitely come out because I actually have read that for no reason. I have.
Yeah, I didn't get it, so I thought I wonder if maybe it's come out or not.
No, well, it's definitely come out.
Comic guy.
You might want to talk to him.
It was fun in that it really went out of its way to present Krang as a legitimate threat, but it's very hard to escape the inherent ridiculousness of little brains scuttling around a jungle planet killing wild animals and things.
Well, the thing is, the Krang, before they went to Planet X, were a threat to them. And why they were on Planet X other things going on with them. So you have that to look forward to, McFeely. So yeah, this is a really good, you know, jumping on point. You've got the classic, they're back on Earth, they've got a new threat, and Shredder's up to a new plot, so here you go. Can't go wrong. So, and another little one that I want to mention, because we haven't really been giving a whole lot of love lately, but I love this comic. The McFeely loves it too. Superman's Family Adventures. Now
it's all over.
You know, well, the thing is, wasn't it supposed to end on issue 14?
No, this is the last one.
Is it? Okay, I was thinking. I'm like, and the thing is, it ended really well. You know,
Did you not talk about the last issue? Did we skip it?
No, we talked about it after the show. I didn't review it on the show, I don't think, but we talked about it after the show because it was so great. It's like Superman Family Adventures was odd for a little while there. Just as it was moving into double digits, it did some odd things that I just couldn't... It's like, it's strange in that it seems to trade on the assumption that people have watched Superman 1 and 2. The little That's kids true. Who are reading this comic... will have read that and will get any, because it's not like their little throwaway joke the way Tiny Titans would make throwaway jokes to DC continuity that were funny in their own right but extra funny for people that knew. It's like they would make jokes based around the sentence "I like pink very much," and Zod would call the Earth planet Houston and stuff, and I'm like, those aren't double meanings. That's just a reference to the film. And if the little kids that you're making this for haven't seen that film, that's not going to make any sense. And I still can't figure out, even now at the very end, if they were supposed to have known Brainiac before or not. Because, you know, they reacted with... There was this whole mystery about the Brainiac symbols being on Luthor's technology and on things that they would find. And then Brainiac turned up and... It was really unclear whether or not he knew Brainiac already or not. And it was just odd. I couldn't make heads or... Believe it or not, yes, I'm actually going to say this sentence about Superman Family Adventures. I could not make heads or tails of the continuity of Superman Family Adventures. Okay, yeah. Okay, that's a thing I have just said.
But the thing is, it was still fun. It was always exciting.
But last issue was so great.
It's the super happy, everyone hug kind of ending. You're just like, you just want to get up and go, yay! Oh,
I mean,
like, does a Kryptonite man hug Crypto and Crypto doesn't die? Because that would be awesome. Crypto, he just hugs him and he dies. No.
Darkseid is going to crash a flaming meteor into Metropolis. Yeah. He's already beaten the Justice League, so it's up to the super family, including Superman's mom and dad and all super pets. And even the tiny Titans as super pets, because they ring up Wayne Manor to get them to come and help in the fight as well. And all the super pets from the Super Pets series of mini illustrated children's books that Baltazar and Franco do come to join the fight as well. And the elves beat the Kents, and it's all super good. Wow.
Yeah, it's the super happy, you know. If there's a super person, thing, object, creature that's in the super family, It's pretty much in this issue, and it's just thank you.
I love how Superboy and Supergirl all recognize Darkseid as the lunch lady from their old school.
Yeah, you're the lunch lady. and what was the joke? I'm the only superhero that works week or supervillain that works weekends.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the actual? I'm just trying to find the line.
No wonder he's so evil. I mean, it makes sense now.
And so beginning to find, they turn. Oh, there you guys are. Lunch Lady Darkseid, what are you doing? Being the bad guy.
Why?
My day off. I'm only evil on weekends. No! Are we going to crash into Earth or what? there is this one weird little scene in here, though, where we see Lex Luthor do Superman Returns, in that he uses a Kryptonian crystal and some kryptonite to make. It's a nice twist in that he's not just making an evil island that he can sell for land. He makes his own kryptonite fortress of solitude, and it's like an evil green fortress of solitude that rises up out of the ocean, and it's going to be a place where he and Miss Teschmacher can raise the Luthor family to fight the super family.
That's actually brilliant, because Superman can never show up at your doorstep and stop you.
I mean, exactly. And he's like, observe! And he pulls this sheet off a tube, and it's a clone of me, my dear! It's a little ginger afro Luthor Jr., you know, such a handsome little guy, don't you think? And then she says,
he has hair!
Of course he does, Miss Teshmugger! I wasn't always bald, you know?
Really?
Really?
It's a long story. It is I!
It was a really good ending. I'm kind of sad to see it go.
It was a very sweet ending. I'm not entirely sure. I feel like most of the issue is probably as scripted where it wasn't originally intended to be the final issue, because the Luthor family thing really seems like it was going to go somewhere, you know?
Yeah, see, that's what I was thinking too, and I'm like, okay.
But then the very last page feels a teeny bit tacked on to create an extra note of finality.
Yeah, there's a little note at the very end. Thank you for believing in a super. Thank you for believing a super family can fly.
Aww, damn it!
It's very sad because I love this comic.
The last scene, it's on the Kent farm, like, and it's like, Jonathan, yes, Martha, the elves are here to meet us. The elves thought they were destroyed with Krypton. No, they're alive. They're outside waiting. Mr. Nice. And Mrs. Kent, we want to thank you for raising our son, Kal-El. Clark? Yes. Superman? Martha, that's a secret. I think they know, Jonathan.
It's just so dang cute, and I'm really going to miss it.
It's kind of ridiculous that they were able to believably craft a wonderful little world where Superman was actually allowed to have both his parents be alive again, but they did, and it's so great.
It was just, like I said, the last pages are a perfect ending to the comic.
They really are.
It's just, that last panel, we don't want to spoil it, that last panel, you're just like, aww! It's kind of like, you know, a puppy and a kitten together. Aw. Like, aww. Aww. You can't get to
that's that hysteria.
So, yeah. Even if you haven't read the other ones, you probably should pick this one up just so you can see just the most one of the most perfect endings to a comic. If you know anything about Superman, you'll be able to pick this up and be.
But you'd better have read Superman. Watched Superman 1 and 2 if you want to read that.
I think you can enjoy it.
If you haven't seen Superman 1 and 2, then why are you reading a Superman comic to begin with?
Exactly. I
mean, tell that to the 4-year-olds. This thing's supposed to begin at.
I should give this to one of my 4-year-old neighbors and see if they like it. I'll let you know. If he's trying to find another world inside his camera.
It's like, look, do you see that? It's like a beam coming right down, but it's not a beam because
it's just your light.
It's not light. No, see, it's gone now. Look, I think there's something. Anyway. One for the audio listeners. Yes.
It's a spirit. Don't turn the lights out. Then you'll
no, it's see. The ghost of the machine.
Yeah, that's what it is. Something okay. bad.
Well,
okay, what you got for us?
Me, I suppose. It was a very Hickman-tastic week this week.
Good God, yes.
It was with Avengers, New Avengers, East of West, and what I'm going to talk about this week, Manhattan Projects. Didn't think I was going to talk about Manhattan Projects, then I remembered what Manhattan Projects was about and thought it was really great, actually.
That's a really good series.
This particular issue is about the other guys. Because the very much the stars of this series so far have been Oppenheimer, or, you know, Oppenheimer's evil twin brother who killed an atom and has millions of multiple personalities warring for dominance in his head.
My God, I need to read this book. Why have I not read this book yet?
Albrecht Einstein, evil parallel universe version of Albert Einstein, who took his place and trapped him in his own evil dimension. Richard Feynman, who really doesn't have anything interesting going on with him. And Werner von Braun, who has turned into a full-blown cyborg with more than just a cyborg arm after the rather devastating events of the last story arc. He has a targeting visor over his eye now. And you know, as after recent events have in Manhattan Project, the second story arc is essentially about the Manhattan Projects decide to team up with Star City, which is the Soviet equivalent of the Manhattan Projects, to form basically their to separate from their governments and form their own independent nation of science, all in secret, of course. And the Illuminati took issue with that and used the FDRAI to destroy them within using robots. But they sorted it. And it all worked out well. So this issue is about the other two guys who have always been around in the background, and they have had little things to do. Enrico Fermi and Harry Daglihan. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. Now, as with all members of the Manhattan Projects, those are real-life scientists who really did exist. Harry Daglihan died in real life when he was accidentally irradiated in a lab accident. But in this, of course, he lives on as an irradiated skeleton inside a containment suit.
Of course he does.
Of course he does. They used him to kill the alien race earlier in the series. Early in the series, when they make contact with the aliens who crashed at Roswell and discover that they have actually been conquered by an evil race that has set its signs on Earth, they send Daglihan and someone else out to be their representatives. But they know the aliens are evil, so as soon as they appear and make Daglihan doesn't know what's going to happen, but the other guy shatters his suit and his radiation just kills all the aliens. He doesn't have a happy life. And the other character is Enrico Fermi, who, again, was in real life. We really don't know what the deal with him is, but we have known from the cast page for a long time that he is not a human being. And this issue is about these two characters. They are the B-team of the Manhattan Projects, and this is an issue about them being buddies. Or maybe a little bit more. I'm not sure. I don't know if comics are conditioning me to find gay in things now, with More Than Meets the Eye going on. So, you know, after this week's issue of More Than Meets
Why did you have to say More Than Meets? Okay, never mind.
I've just been like, that has had one of the sweetest, straight-up gay romances in comics, I think.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, here's Enrico Fermi and Harry Daglihan. I'm just like, how they... There's you know, the thing opens and they're just eating in the commissary. Well, no, Fermi's eating. Daglihan can't eat anymore. We see Daglihan's origin for the first time, and then they go up to the moon to discuss how they will be spreading out to Mars. Because, obviously, you know, like, the Star City representatives are Yuri Gagarin, the first man in space, and Laika, the first dog in space, who talks now because of some reason or another.
Who doesn't want a talking dog?
Exactly. And we get flashbacks to his origin and to how Fermi invented Daglihan's containment suit. And, you know, there's not a lot to actually say about the meat of the story. It's just an issue about the B-team. And it's not them, like, actually saving the universe in secret and behind him or anything. It's just a little story about their friendship and their relationship. And it's very... They're bros. They're science bros.
Has there been any trades on this yet?
Yeah, the first one's been out a while. I believe the second one just came out last week.
Now, is it five issues?
Yes, that would take you up to... You know, I'm not actually sure now. The first one, I think, is five. I'm not sure if the second one goes up to 10 or 9. This is issue 11.
Okay.
Issue 10 was a standalone issue, but issue 9 was the end of the... of the Star City rebellion with the evil Roosevelt robots. So I don't know if the second volume goes up to 9 or 10, but you should get it anyway, because it is...
Yeah,
I talked to somebody about the Manhattan Projects this week. Somebody's got a Manhattan Projects trade coming their way. I talked somebody into it this week. So, yeah.
Good for you. More people should read that one.
It's what I, you know, what I always said about... I've said this before about Manhattan Projects. What I said about Hickman's Shield was that You can throw lots of big ludicrous concepts at me, but where is the story? You know, Shield never Shield went on hiatus just as the story finally seemed to be kicking in. And this one, it's not that there's some. I'm presuming there is some long term goal for this, but there is a sense ever since the first trade is really a meet the cast exercise. And here's our high concept. The second one is like honestly a story, and it does change the status quo of the book. So this one is actually a little calming note, a story of just like the two people who don't get a lot of face time in this and what's really going on with them. And it does also see it shines a very deliberate spotlight on the mystery of Fermi, and has established that it seems like Daglahan's actually the only one who knows that he is an alien, he's not a human being. Daglahan was visually interesting as the old irradiated green skull floating in a containment suit type dealie. And Fermi was interesting because the cast list said not human, but neither one of them has actually done it. Fermi is visually interesting, Daglahan's visually interesting, and Fermi's not uninteresting to look at either because he has these elfin ears and this odd facial structure, odd even among Nick Patara's usual art in this book that made them stand out, but they haven't really distinguished themselves on page, and this is really about giving these supporting cast members some time on their own. I mean, to be honest, you could really just, if you hadn't read any Manhattan Projects, you really could just pick this issue up and give it a look, because it is a virtually entirely isolated story about the Manhattan Projects and their new combined nation of science with Star City from these two guys' point of view, with a flashback origin for Daglahan that introduces him as a character and the birth of his friendship with Fermi. It's just a really solid set of 22 pages that works well in isolation and also really finally turns a light on some guys who were not in bad need of it, but who you realize were in need of it only after it happened, if you know what I mean.
So it would be perfect for me, because I haven't read a single issue.
I honestly think if you pick this up and give this a read, and you would come away interested. I think I would honestly defy somebody to pick this up, read it, not feel like A, that they hadn't got a nice, like, complete little story, because you get the complete story of Daglahan from past to present in this issue, and to not feel intrigued to read more, because, like, there's a scene where Oppenheimer gives an address and reveals the four plans that he's ready to put in, that will be the next thing that the... Do they have a name for their combined thing? I've forgotten if they do.
Now, I do have the first issue of the Comixology, because they... First issue of a lot of Image Comics are free. For number ones. And I just haven't read it because I'm afraid to read it. Because I'm afraid I'll read it, and then I'm afraid I'll want to buy it. I've kind of put it off. You know?
Well, I think you could. I'm really only realizing it as I say it now, but I really think anybody could just pick this up and read it and get a nice complete, a nice story that begins and ends, or an open ending, to be fair, but like that has a no finality about it. But there's these two pages where Oppenheimer details the plans that he wants for them to do next. You know, reaching Mars, perfecting biological systems, long-range energy plans, and a secret fourth plan that only one of them in his head knows about. You know, and I would defy you to not be interested to read more after reading this one. It's a very good dual-purpose issue in that regard. And I enjoy the Manhattan Projects. It's always a hit of insane genius, just like complete wild high concept stuff. I think this one is still the best issue in quite a while because it doesn't lie entirely. Like last issue was entirely inside Oppenheimer's head as we saw the different Oppenheimer personalities interacting, and it was mostly all high concepts. You know, this one is one of the more human issues of the Manhattan Projects. It's really about taking it back down to two guys who are essentially pretty normal guys. It's just that one's an irradiated walking skeleton and the other's an alien and nobody knows about it. And I don't know. Is it all of the homo? I don't know. I don't know if comics are just conditioning me to see things that way lately.
I don't know if it's like the comics are conditioning you. It's the fact that it's there in the comics. That is a storyline that are in a lot of comics right now.
Gender issues are a hot button topic right now.
They are an issue.
And with that, let's talk about FF number 6.
There you go.
Segways. Yeah, let's see. JD pull
that was awesome.
Okay, I want to ask you one thing, though. I want to ask you one thing before we start talking about it. Did you realize that Mike Allred did not do the art for this issue? Because I didn't.
Right away, no.
I had to look.
I realized eventually, I don't remember where exactly. I think it was probably when I took a really good look at She-Hulk. Because She-Hulk does not look like Ulrich She-Hulk. There's like it's a little different. But
Ulrich She-Hulk is like more muscular, I think, right?
A lot of its general proportions of her body. She looks a little more human in her proportion here. Ulrich draws her very broad-shouldered,
But like, I'm not knocking the art because I like the art a lot. The art was nice.
I mean, Mike Allred is a tough act to follow.
Yeah.
On anything, and I mean, this is the first big two book that he would have drawn regularly since Ecstatics, I think. I think Joe Quinones, who does the art for this issue, I think he might have subbed in for Fraction for Allred in a few places before. I'm not 100% sure, but I think there was a Dead Girl miniseries. Few years back, and Dead Girl was one of the characters in Allred's Ecstatics, and I think Quinones drew that. You know, he's a good match tonally for Allred.
Yeah, I want him to do any issues that Mike Allred doesn't do.
Yeah, if Mike Allred has to leave the planet for some reason, his home needs
this guy.
Call Joe Quinones in. You know.
Yep.
So FF number 6. We probably won't go all the way through this because this issue is significant for one major thing. The story of this is that the Yancey Street Gang are really taking their frustrations on Darla for being like the thing of the new FF. You know, nobody messes with the thing except the Yancey Street Gang. If you don't know who the Yancey Street Gang characters from Lee and Kurt. Well, characters. I say characters. They're always normally the thing with the Yancey Street Gang is that they're perennially off screen, always unseen characters. All you ever see are shadowy figures and hands reaching into panels and things. They have been tormenting the thing since the Lee and Kirby days. They were just like the thing was just too uppity for their liking, and they were determined to take him down a peg by sending him packages with like fake ticking bombs and custard pies and things.
Yeah,
splat. Yeah. I think like as continuity rolled on and things, it was expanded that Ben actually grew up on Yancey Street and his brother used to lead the gang, and Ben then led the gang himself after his brother died as a result of gang warfare, and there's a sort of a lingering resentment there that somebody from Yancey Street and a member of the gang actually ascended to such great things, and they it's kind of a loving thing that they do, but there's that slight sense of resentment there as well.
Even in this issue, it does seem very loving because it's like, yeah,
kind of
you're replacing him. You can't replace him. He's our thing, you know.
Nobody messes with the thing but us.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's kind of like it's a big sister and big brother kind of thing. The big sister and big brother could pick on the little kids as much as they want, but if someone messes with their brother and sister, they're going to kick their butts, right?
Exactly. And it's the Yancey Street Gang, they have always had nothing but an antagonistic relationship with Ben. They have never done it. I don't think the only time they ever do anything nice for him is when someone else is messing with him, you know, and he's always driven to rage by everything they do. So it's not like, oh, they love each other really. No, they really don't, but they're very proprietorial about one another. So that's the main story. Like Darla's she's doing a live performance of some of her new music, and all the members of the audience, when she looks up, are suddenly wearing thing masks. The cover is very, just hold the cover up for the people at home.
The cover's great. I love that cover.
I work in a comic store for the shop Facebook this week, or last week when this issue was out. I used this as our cover photo just to promote the issue long before I knew what was actually going to be in it. I think the iconography is supposed to evoke Anonymous, you know, with their V for Vendetta masks. Occupy Yancey Street is kind of the vibe that it gives off, you know. But Ant-Man then totally schools them. I mean, we've seen the Yancey Street Gang go through some rather odd evolutions in the last couple of years, as Hickman showed that the gang had become populated rather heavily with failed investment bankers and lawyers as the economy...
Yeah, oh, I remember that, yeah!
But I guess the economy has rebounded a little because things are a little better now. But the current iteration of the gang, they're kind of like WikiLeaks. They hack Darla's phone and get all this terribly embarrassing information and leak it, you know, to mess with her. But the main story of the issue is how Ant-Man does it right back to him and hacks into their phones and really
yeah, I love that scene where he's like, "Yeah, she's not the thing, and I'm not Reed Richards." You know, and he basically said, "Yeah,
yeah." It's a good show. It's a good showing for Scott. I don't know what's going on with Scott and Darla.
See, it seems like the relationship's starting to
something's happening there. I thought she'd be a little young for him, but something's going on with Scott and Darla there. I don't know if it's just that there's a mutual respect there or something. I mean, Scott's a guy, of course, who was an ex-con who had to really prove him. He stole the Ant-Man gear from Hank Pym when he became Ant-Man for the first time. I mean, he really had to prove himself. And, you know, he was an Avenger and a member of the Fantastic Four. He really did prove himself. So maybe he sees this in somebody who is pop starlet who...
You think it's like the sort of father-daughter relationship we're seeing, maybe?
Yeah, I mean... On the one level, like on the very surface of it, you do start. Maybe it's just because it's like old. She's old enough, and he's himself. Maybe couple romantic thing is just sort of what you start to see there. But of course, this is a man just who did lose his daughter not so very long ago, so there could be a sort of surrogate daughter thing there. And of course, as I say, it's somebody who has made a rather sudden entrance into the superhero world, rising from what would notionally be viewed as unsuitable beginnings, as like this celebutante. So I could see why he would feel protective of her and want to help her along her way there as well. And the other mystery running through the issue is that after the end of last issue, Medusa has disappeared with Bentley. And things don't really get moved along there at all, save the fact that we find out Medusa's hair still wiggle after they've been fallen
out.
That's
so creepy.
You know what I really love as well? We didn't talk about it last time or anything, because we haven't talked about FF in a couple of issues, but I really love that they've added Black Bolt and Medusa's son to the Future Foundation.
Yeah.
I didn't know
this character. I mean...
I'm not familiar with the character's history or anything. I think he went bonkers once... but I think this is very much a situation where he's been off the grid for long enough that they can bring him back and he's suddenly a teenager. Like a soap opera, you know?
Yeah.
Suddenly he's a teenager when I'm pretty sure when he last appeared he was probably 8, you know? I've been enjoying him. I like this. He seems to have a sort of like... seems to have an argument with Black Bolt, but it is entirely silent because Black Bolt can't talk and it's just like they mentally communicate and he's like, "Dad! Okay.
Yeah. Awesome.
But so obviously that's the issue. It's I'm still enjoying Fantastic Four, but the books are leagues apart. It's unfathomable, really.
FF is like my favorite of the two, easily.
Oh, totally.
It's
entertaining. But you wouldn't believe they were by the same writer. It's just their worlds apart. Completely different, and FF is fantastic. It is probably—I would say—it's probably the single most underrated book that Marvel is publishing right now.
Oh yeah,
what's
going on with Scott's dreams? We didn't talk about that real quick. This reoccurring scene he keeps seeing play out with a girl. I mean, is it just like? I mean, is there something more going on there, or is it just a sad?
I don't know if he's supposed to be seeing the daughter or not, but something
weird's going on, yeah.
What are these Doom Herbies? I don't know these. I don't remember these. Have these appeared before?
I don't think so. I just thought it was just something crazy that just showed up.
A load of Herbies wearing Dr. Doom cloaks. Kneel before Herbie.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I wasn't sure. They appeared at the very start of the issue, and I like just as Scott is waking up, and I honestly wasn't sure if he was, if they were supposed to be there or not. Like, I thought he was ignoring them because he thought he was dreaming or seeing them or something, and he was just brushing past them. And then he was in the bathroom, and he was going to go, wait a minute. But no, they do seem like they're supposed to be there.
Yeah. I have no idea.
Okay, I got a question for y'all. Because yeah. I haven't read FF for a while. Is Dr. Doom still in the picture?
Where is Doom at the minute? Doom.
Yeah. Last time we saw Doom, he was what?
They did go and get him from the Parliament of Dooms. He's back in the he's back in the game. Yeah, no, that's right. No, Alex has gone off to Latveria.
Yeah, okay.
That's what we last saw. I totally forgot. Yeah, he's still in the picture. He hasn't played a role in the books yet, but the characters were arguing an issue or two ago, we just need to go and kill Dr. Doom. We need to just do that. That should be a thing. And Alex was like, we can't just do that. And they're like, Alex, get out. Get the fuck out, Alex. Alex has gone off to Latveria to say to Dr. Doom, they're coming to kill you. So what's going on there?
Yeah.
No, but the real meat and potatoes, the real reason anybody's talking about this, but beyond the obvious, and why we're putting it at the end of the show here, is a single-page scene between the Moloids this issue. Now, we've said before when we've been talking about this issue, about this series, that the Future Foundation kids are really coming into their own. And it started after the big climax of Hickman stuff and in the denouement period, in the epilogue area, the characters did start to become more identifiable and have their own quirks going, but it's really, really rolling along very nicely in FF. Even the two Atlantean kids got a little something to do last issue. You know, they summoned up the monster to take care of things last issue.
Yeah.
Somebody really needs to give them more to do, though, because they right now are the two that have just... They have so little going on. And somebody could really stand to give Onome something to do as well, because she's just sort of there as well.
Yeah.
But she's not been around that long, whereas the Atlantean kids have been around for like 3 years at this stage, and they've done nothing.
Yeah, she sort of showed up at the end of his run.
Yeah,
and nothing kind of happened out of it.
Yeah, I mean, that was in the two issues where Hickman was basically setting up the Black Panther's new status quo to lead into New Avengers.
Yeah.
And they just quickly added this extra little Wakandan girl to the FF, and Hickman obviously didn't seem like he had any plans for her because he's leaving the book, and Fraction hasn't done anything with her either, so I don't know, she's just kind of there. But the Moloids have really been the fun breakout characters of the thing, and this is this wonderful one-page scene, and I'm just going to... Now, Triple, you read this. Nicole, you've not read this. You haven't seen this
around?
I was retweeting this page because people need to be talking about this.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm still interested. I've just got so much going on. I have so many polls. I'm like, I got to give up something. That was one of them. So.
Well, I'm simply going to read this page out now, so you might want to prepare your squeeze.
Okay.
So, one of the Moloids starts on a big tight shot of the Moloid Tong's head. Not that you can tell them apart.
Yeah.
Brothers, I have this thing, and now you will have it as well. It will be ours, and we will find out what ownership of this thing means. And we pull the panel out to see that Tong has put a frilly pink dress on over the top of his white Fantastic Four uniform. Tong says, "Well, I have a girl inside of me. I tried to be a boy like you, but there is no boy here, and I do not wish to be what I am not any longer. This is unexpected. It is unexpected and scary and wonderful. It is new. Who I am is new. My brothers, you have a sister." Transgender Moloid!
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's only half the scene, you know. And she lifts her hands too, because they're on the other. They're all sitting and just looking. They're rather puzzled looks on their faces, and she says, "Are you still my brothers? Are you still my family?" And the littlest Moloid gets up and he walks up to her and he looks at her and he puts his arms around her and he says, "Love my tongue." all the other Moloids come and hug her and she says, "I love you too. I love you all so very much."
Aww.
Total squee fest. Yeah. Real fantastic heartwarming stuff. And this is directly addressing what we were talking about Batgirl last week. It was last week we were talking about Batgirl, wasn't it?
Yeah, where her roommate
comes out as transgender at the end of a page, and then you turn the page and things have moved on. Yeah. And I think the point we basically made was, while it's great that it's happening, and you know, basically, gay people can be in comics without being news now. We have moved beyond that. It's only if they're married that it's news. But they're allowed to be in comics now without it being a thing. Without it being headline news. Transgender seems to be the new hot button issue. And I think basically the point we made last week was that as far as its representation in comics and things goes, transgender is not the same as being gay. And you can't really just drop it in there and just move on. I'm not saying you have to do big dedicated stories to coming out or anything. I don't think we were saying that at all. But you have to do whenever you're coming off huge hype of it being the first transgender character in comics and everything, a little more is expected.
Yeah, I like the little follow-up scene. Is that what you're getting to?
Even this page alone delivers infinitesimally more infinitely more than what was delivered in Batgirl without New York Times trumpeting headlines. I had no idea this was coming. You know, I just turned the page and it happened. And it is a Mullard who talks very straightforwardly and frankly about the fact that she realizes she's always been a girl inside herself. She's tried to be a boy like the other Moloids, but she's not been happy with it, and she's now coming out, and she's now reassigning herself. She is now going to identify as female, and there's this bit where she's got her hands up, and you're like, they are going to accept her, right? This isn't going to go all horribly wrong, is it?
It's like, this is a fun book. They're not going to, like, stone her or something, are they?
But this is the best, when you think about it, this is probably the single best book this could actually happen in. In a book where 70% of the B-cast outside of the main FF aren't even human beings. What the hell difference does it make if one of them actually is transgender or not? You got four Moloids, you got two Atlanteans, you got a living dragon android, you got a clone of a person, and you got two mutants, and you got one normal human being.
Well, I was going to ask you something about this issue. I didn't even realize that Moloids had gender.
See, I don't think they actually do.
I mean, like, one of them's a head. I mean, that's all that poor guy is. He's a head. You know?
I'm pretty sure, I can't swear to this, but I'm pretty sure Moloids are all smooth around the U-bend. You know what I mean?
I thought they were like clones or something, like, you know, something.
I don't
think grew
anything going on down there. I don't think they physically have sexes.
Been influenced by the culture. I'm thinking that's where.
Yeah.
I mean, they are very advanced Moloids anyway, and it's kind of the same issue as has arisen over in More Than Meets the Eye. To come back to that again, where Canon has established that in world that story takes place in, the Transformers are genderless, but the use of male pronouns and precedent within the franchise has them all as male by default, even though the canon is that they are not. And certainly the Moloids, we've never thought of them as anything but a collection of little boys, really, have we? No, I don't think we have. Even if, like, notionally they have no physical sex, the same as a Transformer doesn't have a physical sex, they can have a gender. Like, sex is the physical construct, gender is the social construct, is the is what the mind says that it is, you know. I would say that I'm pretty sure that Moloids don't have sexes, but I wouldn't be surprised to read somewhere that a story had female Moloids and maybe even Moloid children at some point in the past. And regardless, either way,
I like how the one that's only got a head, when he hugs her, he goes tonk, because he's putting the helmet on her head and goes tonk. You know,
he just lays his head against her head, and it's just, and then the follow up scene just beautifully sells it as well. Like the FF are having a briefing in a room, and they're just talking about what's going on, and then Scott just goes, "Wait, and then through the glass-paneled window walls, the Moloids stride by in single file, led by Tong, in her pink dress, hand in hand, just walking along. And then Scott just goes, is that a thing we're doing now?
Yeah. Yeah.
So and then Darla and She-Hulk go, good for her.
Yeah.
You know, they all just accept. I mean, that, FF is the sort of book. I mean, X-Men have always been the analog for minorities, of course, in Marvel Comics. Yeah. So it's not like this would be any more out of place there. But there's just something about the cast that that FF has set up with its massive variety of races, genders, and whatever all else, that this is just something where it would be. There's no question in your mind about the way these characters accept this happening. The world they live in and the characters and the creatures they surround themselves with, it's like, yeah, okay, what's one more? What's one more on top of all of that? It's it's so sweet. It's so heartwarming. And it is to be done without any of the hype and all of the headline-grabbing nonsense, and to deliver so much more than the Batgirl issue did. Not enough people are talking about this. They honestly are not. More people, as much as I praise the book for not doing the headline-grabbing attention thing, it's kind of resulted in a consequence of not nearly enough damn people talking about this. And I really want to see this action, as small as it is within the context of...
Yeah, I mean, like, when I was reading it, like, I understand what she was talking about, but, like, it didn't cross my mind that that's why you want to talk about the issue. I was like, oh, you know, obviously because of the Gansett Street game, because they're just so goofy
that's what
they're doing. And, you know, because you love them, but I was like, yeah, but, yeah. I mean, maybe that's because they did it well, because I didn't, you know, think about it that much. It's just, hey, that's just a character, and that's
it's
what the character's
doing
now.
Sounds like a really good story. A really good story.
It is, It's just so sweet. And you really do go, aww, whenever it happens. I was like, no way, aww.
Yeah.
It, you know, my eyes just went, aww, when it happened. More people really need to be talking about it, and I really would like to see it put FF on the map, because, as I say, probably the single most underrated book Marvel is putting out for many reasons. I mean, the very last page of this is when they're talking about the Dragon Man has spent the whole issue trying to find out where Bentley and Medusa have gone after while Scott's been off helping Darla. And at the very end, like the Baxter, while everybody's gathered together, the Baxter building shakes, goes pop, and they just teleported away to somewhere else. And the last page is just the Baxter building and some pink swirling void somewhere, and Ant-Man going, what? No question mark, just what? it seems to be the negative zone. And yeah, because they've been sent to the negative zone, because then it says under the to be continued, in the negative zone!
Yeah!
Literally, that's actually what it says. I'm not making that up.
Yeah.
In the negative zone!
Now that I no longer have Superman, I might put this on my pull list.
Oh, God, dude.
It's a
book
that
deserves all the press that it's getting. And as I say,
I remember when it first came out, that story was so good, and about their daughter, like, wanted to be roommates with with Doom. I'm like, this is awesome.
Yeah. Just another great issue of what is a great and underrepresented comic with such a surprising and heartwarming little scene that, like, in the context of the book, is one page that doesn't affect anything else that is going on there, but is massively significant otherwise, and is honestly reason enough to pick up the issue in and of itself. It truly is.
And I think it's a contender for, like, one of the best covers of the year, too.
Oh, it's a good cover, isn't it?
I saw that cover, and as soon as I saw it, I was like, wow!
What cover is it?
FF.
All the thing heads.
All the thing faces, yeah. The thing masks.
What number
and then
is
Darla.
It?
Number six.
Yeah. Because I saw it and I just loved, I mean, like, just like the whole, you know, she's got the thing suit and she doesn't have the head part of it. You know, not like the other person that had that suit and then everybody else has the thing heads and they're just like judging her.
Oh, cool.
You know? it's great.
No, definitely.
That's
I know.
Cool.
I don't think I can say enough good things about that issue, to be honest. It's I mean, it was a good issue already anyway, but the Moloid scene just pitches it like so far over the crossbar. It is excellent stuff. I think that's about it for this week. Anybody got anything else? Anything we want to tell people about?
Go see Iron Man.
Yeah, well, that'll be next week's show, I think.
It's a free comic book day Saturday.
Yeah, next Saturday. Lord. Yep.
Good Lord.
So you were saying that you didn't know if there was anything major or not that I need to look out for?
For Free Comic Book Day?
Yeah.
Well, Marvel's doing some kind of Infinity Prelude, so that's going to be important, I would say. DC is... I'm sure DC is doing something new, something Superman-themed, obviously.
There's nothing Transformers-related, right? Like, not like a More Than Meets the Eye or something.
IDW's got a new thing coming on. Archie's doing some kind of prologue or prelude style zero chapter for their Sonic Mega Man crossover. Check that out. Which is ripping along nicely, two parts. And I talked about the first part, but the second part really just keeps things rolling. That's a ton of fun. And nothing else I can remember off the top of my head. Nothing.
Aren't they doing Superman issue 1 from the reboot?
No, it's not that. They're doing something. They definitely have something. I'm pretty sure that it's some that they are doing something new. I'm pretty sure they have some new material out. I'm not 100% sure. I think they do. Maybe they don't. Maybe I'm thinking of last year.
Last year they had what the
The Trinity of Sin. Well, what's that amounted to in the whole year since? Yeah. Bugger all. That's what.
But Marvel didn't do anything last year. Marvel just reprinted stuff last year, right?
Yeah, they reprinted Avengers 12.1 last year, which was like one of the prelude chapters to Age of Ultron, which has taken until now to happen, by the way. I think the year before that was still the worst, though. Marvel did an original Avengers story, and DC reprinted the second part of a 3-year-old Green Lantern story. Not so much. No, the Infinity Prelude seems like it's probably the most significant thing.
I'll try to get that one if I can manage to.
I would assume that Hickman is writing it and Chung is drawing as well as a prologue to it. So I mean that's just gold right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's everything. Iron Man 3 is coming out in America next week, so hopefully JD will see that. We know he has lagged behind when it has come to catching up on films.
He kind of likes Iron Man, though. I think he'll be there.
I think the thing that I'm hung up on, he's really going to be hung up on. We shall see. Oh, Sprite says in the chat there that IDW is doing a Free Comic Book Day turtle jobby.
Oh, yay!
There you go.
I probably already have it, but I'll pick it up.
I believe it's an adaptation of the new cartoon.
Oh, okay.
Which I have been catching up on this past week.
That show is so good. You still like it?
I love it.
I only watched like the first 8 episodes or so, and then I let a bunch build up before I watched anymore. But like, man, the plot suddenly started happening after I put it on pause, you know?
What was the last one you saw? Have you seen the most recent one? Or?
No, I'm still a bunch behind. The last one I watched was the Pulverizer episode today.
Yeah, you're way back. Yeah, I was going like, to ask about something, but I don't want to spoil nothing. So.
McFeely is going to have a heyday when he gets closer to getting caught up, because you know how McFeely loves Baxter Stockman.
I do love Baxter Stockman, but if he's not some kind of crazy fly mutant, I love Baxter Stockman less, but we'll see where it goes. It's nice that we have evolved to a point where we can have a black Baxter Stockman in cartoons now, but don't let that dissuade you from turning him into an awesome fly mutant guy, seriously.
I think maybe like season 2 he's going to be...
Back in the 2003 cartoon, it was like they did absolutely everything to him. You know, remember the whole running gag with Baxter was that he would lose body parts every time he appeared until he was eventually a brain in a jar and then just a hologram. And then his consciousness was in a robot. Then he cloned himself a body and the body decomposed and it was so horrible that the episode was banned on American television. It was like, and in all of that, he never got turned into a fly. That's all I want. Now, I do like the way the new cartoon is and indeed the new IDW stuff as well, is paying homage to the.
They got their act together. If they could just get that movie together and write.
Well, I mean, they say they've at least dropped the. They say they've dropped the alien thing for the movie now. At this stage. That's just for a long
they
time.
They need to drop the Bay on his head.
Yeah. On his head.
Oh, see what you did there. Drop like you know.
Well, because I saw that horrible painting game this weekend, at that Michael Bay is unforgivable.
I'm sorry.
Unforgivable.
I shan't be bothering with it. I wouldn't have been bothering with it or anything, but...
I thought for a small chance that maybe Dwayne Johnson could save the movie.
So no. Rock couldn't save it.
I don't think that has ever happened in the history of cinema. Don't think he's ever saved a film. He's been in some films. I don't think he's ever saved them.
He has done acting.
I love Dwayne Johnson.
Acting. Right, okay. I think we'll call it end of that. This has been the show. I was not JD Church. Thank you all for listening. Hopefully JD will be back with us next week. Thanks to everybody in the chat. Nice turnout for the chat this week. And we will see you next week when it will be Fanboy versus...
You've been watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely. Download our Android apps. Visit tfradio.net/Android or search Google Play for Radio Free Cybertron.